Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast. Jeffrey Klein has conversations with a diverse array of successful people, sharing their stories to educate, inspire, and entertain. Here is your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Jerron Hurt, a former teacher turned MasterChef champion. He grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, with a huge influence from his late mother's cooking inspiration. During his college career, he continued to cook and make dishes for his friends. So when the opportunity came to audition for MasterChef, with family support, he decided to take his chance. And months later, found himself being announced by Gordon Ramsay as MasterChef Season 9 winner. And since then, he's continued on his journey and continues to cook up his inspirational food. He lives in Nashville with his wife, Brandy, and his almost one-year-old daughter, Harley. Please welcome Jerron.
Hey, everybody. Jeffrey, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and thank you for being here. Well, I like to start at the beginning. So I want to know, where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. Love Louisville. If you guys don't know, Louisville's the Derby city. So it is the city that Derby happens every single year. My mom actually went to culinary school. And so that was my inspiration. But my mom didn't finish culinary school, but loved cooking. And I watched a lot of Food Network with my mom growing up. So that was kind of like my inspiration for cooking. My dad was an automobile repairsman. So, you know, he worked on cars and stuff. And so very, very supportive as well. But I got all of my culinary influence from mama.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Derby. So my grandfather and my father aren't huge Derby fans, but every year the story goes that my grandfather would make a bet with my dad. So, and my dad was kind of the bookie. So my grandfather would say, I want to bet on this horse and you have to take the bet. And they bet $1. And if he won, he paid. And if he didn't, he paid. And so my dad asked me a couple of years ago to follow that tradition. So now my dad every year tells me I'm going to bet on this horse and if it wins. And so I'm losing. I don't have any say in the matter. I'm like, this isn't working out for me because he's, I think, picked two out of the last three, and one of them was like an 8-1 winner. And so maybe it's a $2 bet because I remember paying him $16. I'm like, this isn't fair.
Yeah. But,
it's a nice way for me to be engaged in the Derby in a way I might not otherwise be.
No, for sure. I go to Derby every year and listen, I always win every single time. And it's so crazy because the way that I go about betting on horses, typically I'm just guessing and I always end up winning at least twice, you know, and I bet maybe four or five times. So I usually just take the money and run.
That's the way to be a gambler, yeah, is to take the money and run. So when you grew up, was it pretty early on that you wanted to be something to do with culinary?
Yeah. So, you know, I loved to cook because cooking was in a pastime with me and my mom, you know, absolutely loved it. But, you know, when I think about this area of success, Jeffrey, my mom didn't graduate culinary school and we grew up kind of poor, you know? And so, when I looked around at my family dynamic, I noticed that the only person in my family who was really deemed successful, was my grandmother, who was a teacher. And my grandmother, you know, she lived comfortably. She drove nice cars. She just really was able to just provide for herself. And, you know, a child growing up in a struggling household, you know, in the hood, I mean, you gravitate to people who are doing well. You know, you want that for yourself. And so I was afraid. I was afraid to go to culinary school to become a chef. Because my mom didn't finish and I didn't want to follow in that footstep and I didn't know what jobs were out there. But what I did know is that I wanted to follow in my grandma's footsteps and become a teacher because I wanted to live comfortably.
I think that's reasonable. Also, I think teachers are one of the most important jobs people have and they don't realize, people I don't think appreciate when you have good teachers. Yeah. And I was very fortunate to grow up with great teachers. And when you have good teachers, it makes all the difference. So to have good teachers like you out there is good. So was your grandmother kind of your role model, would you say, growing up, or was there someone else in your life that you kind of looked up to?
Yeah, for sure. So it started out as my grandma. You know, I know I wanted to be a teacher after seeing her get up and go to work every day and just, you know, have nice things. And as I got, you know, as I progressed through school, as I got to high school, there was an English teacher by the name of Mr. Bernard. And he was my freshman English teacher and then was later my senior English teacher. And I mean, just uberly inspired, you know, from the text that we read in class, from just like all of the knowledge that he gave us as kids. And just like, you know, just, hey, you know, Jerron, when you grow up and you become a man, these are the things that you do. And so, I mean, just his whole just demeanor just shined bright on me. And I ended up following his footsteps, becoming an English teacher, and later, you know, wanting to go through like administration and become like a principal. Like, I literally follow his footsteps because, again, he was another positive light that really shined down on me at a time where it felt like only darkness, you know?
Yeah. Again, I think that's the power that a teacher can have, is really to inspire someone and make you feel heard. And again, I'm super thankful that I had amazing teachers when I grew up.
Absolutely.
And it makes you want to, you know, help teach others.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I, you know, that is the reason that I am in the teaching profession as well as the chef profession, because I enjoy building relationships with kids. I enjoy being able to provide opportunity and access to kids, you know, who don't have it, who grew up like me, you know. That is something that is just underrated. And I love it because, you know, I love that feeling when you get, you know, seniors who graduate and come back and say, hey, Mr. Hurt, you know, you really inspired me. You know what I'm going to do? You know, I had a student tell me, hey, you know, I'm going to college to become a teacher and you're the reason why. So it's like a never ending cycle, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, that helps you. It makes all the difference. And I've taken time to go back to teachers. I mean, in the last couple of years, even I reached out to my third grade teacher who I hadn't spoken to and thanked him because it was, you know, he had such an imagination. He turned our entire classroom into a ship and taught to teach us about, you know, the naval industry. And so it was amazing what they can do. And one of the things I loved about him was he was a good storyteller. So when you were growing up, was there anyone who was a particularly good storyteller?
Man, you know, I would have to say my dad's a really good storyteller, but the one who takes the cake is definitely my grandma Elizabeth. And she takes the cake for me because she would tell me all of the stories about kids at school, right? She would tell me, you know, how she would have to discipline kids and the things that they would do and say, you know, and she would really, really, through that, you know, there was always a moral or a lesson at the end of the day, something that you could just pull from, you know, and what's so crazy is you may have not always gotten it in the moment, but it was always some, you know, deeper meaning that lingered on. And you said, huh. You know, that's what she was talking about. So definitely my grandma was that person who had those stories the stories that really had meaning and purpose behind them.
So how old were you when you first started cooking? I mean, you said you liked it, used to do it with your mom and stuff like that. How young were you when you were in the kitchen?
I would definitely say around 5 years old. Like, I loved watching Food Network with my mom. So what she would do is she would go and we would watch Food Network and she would go to the store and buy a lot of the food on food stamps. And like, literally we would go, you know, go into the kitchen. I would watch her cook and she would say, come here, son, let me show you how to do this. And let me show you how to do that. Like, I remember one of the first things that I ever learned to make was potato salad. Just cutting the potatoes down and cutting the eggs down and putting the sauces in and stirring them up. And deviled eggs was another one that I learned to make very young. You know, I was older when I started learning to make it, like fried chicken and green beans and things like that. But yeah, I would definitely say I started off in the kitchen about 5 years old.
What about desserts and things? Because I know, you know, looking at some of the desserts you made in the MasterChef kitchen as an example.
Oh, That's all grandma right there. My grandma was like the pastry chef of our family. You know, when we had family holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, 4th of July, we would all get together. My grandma would always make all of the desserts. So pineapple upside down cakes from scratch. I mean, sweet potato pies, her famous chess pie that I, you know, that I elevated and won the competition with. I mean, those are things that, those were staples on our table every single holiday.
What was your first paying job? Did you have an after school job or something like that?
Yeah, I did. I was 16 years old. And I actually, a couple of days after I turned 16, I got a job at Penn Station East Coast Subs. And I'm not sure if you where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia.
Okay, yeah. So
we call them hoagies up here.
Oh, okay. So Penn Station East Coast Subs is where it was my first job. I just really, really needed a job. And so I could have worked anywhere. I didn't get McDonald's anywhere, but I decided to go there because they just had a hiring sign in the window. But little did I know I would end up loving that job. I stayed working at Penn Station for about 7 years, like all through high school, even through college. I came home on my breaks and worked there. I ended up working in one of the franchises in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where I went to college. And so, I mean, I loved it. And I loved it because I was able to really put my cooking skills and my flair and my love for cooking to use. You know, I can make sandwiches, and I mean, everything is fresh, right? Fresh meat, you know, steak and cheese sandwiches, all the bread and everything's fresh. So I could really, really just like, and one of the things here, Jeffrey, that was so cool that I ended up loving was like the person who works on the grill. I mean, it's like, who can do it the fastest? Who can chop the meat the fastest? And I was the king, baby. So I just really enjoyed, you know, being able to just do what I love, to cook, and not necessarily do it for, you know, like, you know, for a career or anything, but just to do it just to make ends meet at the time, you know?
Well, it's great that you could enjoy it. You know, not a big surprise that you were doing something, you know, you could have worked lots of places, but you end up in the food place because, you know, I think there's
absolutely
destiny for you. So you've been, you know, through MasterChef experience, you've been a lot of places outside of, you know, Kentucky at this point. I always like to find, you know, what's the one place that you kind of find most surprising that you found yourself, whether it be a place or someone you were talking to, and you're like, I can't believe I'm having this conversation with this person.
What's so crazy is that that place for me is definitely home in Louisville, Kentucky, when I go to the Kentucky Derby, because now that I've won MasterChef and I'm considered a celebrity chef, right? I get to go to these exclusive parties and things that I never saw as a kid or never even knew about, right? And I'm going to these hot, like, exclusive parties. And I mean, every celebrity that you can think of, you know, is there. And so, I mean, I've been in a room with Bobby Flay, like, you know, and had a conversation with Bobby Flay. I mean, I've talked to Vivica A. Fox. I mean, Steve Harvey, like, it's crazy just being, again, in the same room with these people. But it, like I said, it's always Derby. That's the season that I get to just meet a lot of people and just have a good time. And it's just one where I have to self-reflect and say, oh my God, I cannot believe that this is happening to me right now.
And being a celebrity chef, you know, one of the things that, as I read about you and I watched videos and interviews of you, you know, I think one of the things why people loved you on the show was because you were very humble and you were very grateful, I think, for the opportunity to become better at what you loved. And yeah. So, you know, how do you stay grounded when you're hanging out with Bobby Flay and Steve Hart? Like, how do you find, you know, because I think that's when we look at celebrities from our side, from the, you know, the mortal people, and, you know, and I have my kids and we look and we forget sometimes that they're just people. Do you find that, you know, being a celebrity has its challenges, and how do you stay true to who you are?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So for me, what has been so fulfilling is that, you know, the person that I was on TV, the person that I was on MasterChef is the person that I am. And so when I meet these people and I'm around these people, you know, I'm very much so very appreciative and very just thank God just for being in the space that I'm at. And I just really just take it. It's a take it all in thing. You know, I'm not one to gloat. I'm never one to just, you know, I just take it all in, you know? And even when I'm communicating with, you know, with other celebrities, it is literally just like, hey, you know, I'm nice to meet you. You know, I've always been a fan, you know, like, and it's crazy. I mean, I have been watching Lindsay Lohan for years and Lindsay Lohan has, she wrote me on social media one day and was just like, I'm a big fan. And I'm like, Lindsay, me, you know? So again, Jeffrey, it's just one of those things where I live in the moment and I am grateful and humble for all of my experiences. And I'm never one to gloat, you know? I just handle life a day at a time. And I just always blessed and humble for my experiences. And that's the way that I look at it.
Well, one of the things that, you know, again, I know that these shows are edited. And so, you know, behind the scenes and what we see is not always the same. So you should thank whoever edited it because they made you look awesome. But I think, you know, it wasn't an easy ride. It's not like you just came in and, you know, and I think the fact that, you know, a good story has, you know, conflict. And so there was this great guy who loved cooking and who was, you know, being a little consistent at the beginning and being the bottom two and things like that. I'm curious your take on how important to be a good chef is it to have passion for what you're doing? Meaning that you might have a chef who's trained at all the right places and has all the skills, and but doesn't really have the heart. How important is that as an ingredient to being a good chef?
Yeah, for sure. Passion is an ingredient in being a chef, but in anything that you do, right? Anything worth value, because, I mean, it gets tough. It gets tough. It gets challenging. You don't always, you know, it's not always peaches and cream in whatever you do. And so it's just passion gives you that ability to just continue to move and continue to do what it is that you love. As for me, you know, when I stepped into the MasterChef kitchen, there were many moments that I struggled, you know, because, you know, thinking about the food, thinking about my style of cooking Southern, I mean, Southern food, don't get me wrong, you can only do so much, it gets limited. And then you have to start thinking of ways to elevate that to restaurant quality. And I really, really, Jeffrey, there was a part of me that had to really learn what my lane is and how to stay in my lane, but elevate that to the max, you know? And passion allowed me to do that. Instead of, you know, looking to see what this person cooked and that person to cook and how I could take and mock and replicate and, you know, it doesn't make sense for Chef Jerron to make a sushi dish on MasterChef when I don't have experience in sushi. So again, just that passion and that love for food just really, really pushed me to look at my cooking style and find ways to elevate that and make me a better chef every single day. And, that passion piece really, really opens your heart and opens your mind to feedback, right? You're never going to know 100% everything in a field. Like you're never going to know that, you know? And so you gotta be open to feedback and you gotta be willing to learn and implement that feedback when it's time. And I think, you know, that is what really, really led to my success on MasterChef, because as I was getting feedback from Chef Ramsay, from Aron and Joe, and even feedback from my peers, right? I learned from my peers. I used that. I went, you know, with my passion for cooking, I went back to my hotel room. I wrote things down. I, you know, conceptualized dishes. I wrote, you know, drew pictures of how I wanted it to look in my mind, and just spent a lot of time there while everyone else was out congregating. I spent time in my room, in my book. And then when I came back, you know, and as you guys see, consistently every single episode, I got better and better and better. So that was that love and passion for cooking that I put into just studying implementation of feedback.
Yeah, and that's just a great lesson in general, which is to, you know, I believe in being a lifelong learner. And I think that's something you're talking to. And in terms of being able to learn things, so I always think about, you know, telling stories that, you know, there are people who think, oh my God, they're just a natural born storyteller. Do you think that being a storyteller is something you either have, or do you think it's a skill you can develop?
You know, partly some of it is talent. I think you can develop components of being a good storyteller, but I do think you have to, like, you have to have a passion for storytelling, a passion for, you know, because there's so many components to a story sometimes, you know, and if you are Speedy Gonzalez, you're, you know, just telling the story, you're leaving out big details and you're leaving out, again, like we talked about earlier, you're leaving out that, that moral or that message that, because every story has to have one, every good story has to have one, you know, something, a takeaway. And so you're, you know, you, you miss that piece. So absolutely telling a story or being a storyteller is definitely a talent. It can be developed, but it starts out as a talent.
And do you make that, does that apply equally to being a good cook? That some people just have a natural flavor palette versus the ability to really learn?
Yeah, I would say so. So I do think anyone can learn to cook, but that passion, right? Just like being a great storyteller and being a great chef, you have to have that passion for cooking, something that keeps you in it when things get tough or when, you know, when people don't understand, like something that keeps you in it and grounded in it. You definitely have to have, because I mean, I know plenty of people who are good cooks who can, you know, who have learned to be good cooks over the years, but like, I don't feel like cooking, or, you know, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to do that, because the passion is not there and they stop seeking to learn how to do things. And so, yeah. So
you actually had some skills in your experience doing some things I think you may not have done before. Did you, when they're like, okay, you're going to have to take away this, you know, deconstruct this, you know, crab as an example, were you freaking out? Like, you're like, I don't know how to do that.
Listen,
like, I watch and go, how is anyone, if they haven't done that, going to know how to do that?
Listen, Jeffrey, I'm going to be completely honest with you in this moment. So with the crab challenge, it wasn't necessarily that I didn't know how to do it, because I could learn, you know, my mind is always, especially being a teacher, like my mind is open and I'm just like, I'm very, like, I can learn, right? But the biggest thing for me was I've never seen a crab up close, touched a crab up close. And for me, I have a phobia of spiders. I'm an arachnophobe. And so, I mean, crabs look like big sea spiders. And I'm just like, no, I don't want to even touch it. But I mean, you would have never known that on camera, because I knew I was being recorded and I kept my composure. Right. But that was the biggest thing for me, was like getting into the tank and grabbing the live crab, you know. But I mean, yeah. The execution piece, I mean, Gordon is an excellent teacher. I know what you see on TV is sped up really quickly, so it's hard to follow. Right. But like when he's doing it in person, he reiterates, you know, hey, this is what you do. Then you do this, you know, and that reiterate. But I mean, he does only show you one time. And so from that one time, you know, you really, really gotta do your best.
It's interesting. So Gordon Ramsay is known as being, you know, really tough.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes relentlessly so, to the point I think people might say he's mean. And in certain shows, he seems meaner than others. And my opinion of him changed when I watched the first season of MasterChef Junior.
Uh-huh.
Because the way he is with kids tells you a lot.
Absolutely.
And I think, but I think on the show, he's mellowed out a little bit too.
Yeah.
And so what was your experience of working under not just him, but obviously Joe, who's your mentor?
Yeah.
What's that like? What's the real Gordon Ramsay like?
So that's, anytime I do an event, that's literally the first question I get every single time. It does not matter. But literally, I mean, Gordon's a cookie. He is one of the nicest guys that you will ever know. You know, when he gets upset and cusses you out, because I've been cussed out by Gordon multiple times, you know, everyone's had their first year of.
We haven't lived until that's happened, right?
But I mean, it's more like a father figure getting on you because they're disappointed in you because you did something crazy, you know, like, come on, Jerron, man. You know, it's one of those type feelings. The reason he gets upset is because he's 9 times out of 10, he showed you multiple times how to do it. And if you're frantic and you're not just mellowed out and, you know, you're not focused and you're letting stress get the best of you, that's what really irritates him. But I mean, he was always nice to me for the most part. You know, he's a prankster. Gordon is a jokester. I mean, he pulls jokes. I mean, I remember one time we were on set and we were standing there. We were getting ready for the cameras to come on, and he pants Ron Sanchez right in the middle of the taping. And so he's the ultimate brain. He joked on my shirts every time I walked in. I mean, I can't think of what they're called. I don't know why I'm drawing blank, but the people who picked my shirts and stuff out, the styling team. The stylist would pretty much put me in these ugly shirts. And every time I walked through the door, Gordon would just start busting out laughing and talking about my shirt. And I would talk about his hair and stuff. And so, yeah, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy.
One of the things that I think that's clear about Gordon, which you referenced earlier, is he has passion for life and clearly for cooking. And I think when we see him being, you know, irritated, it's because he cares. And that's, you know, I think in the show, at least, it comes across, he wants you guys all to do really well.
He does.
And so when you say he's like being a parent, it's not only that he may be disappointed, you know, I've showed you how to do this, but it's also he's pushing you to be the best version of yourself. And I think that's his style. So
absolutely.
You got to respect that, I guess, to a certain degree.
Yeah. No,
so you have a daughter now. I'm curious and in your teaching capacity, if you had a student come up to you and say they wanted to pursue a career in the culinary arts, what would you say to them?
I would say go for it. You know, I would say you can absolutely go for it. Contrary to popular opinion, I don't think that if you want to go into the culinary world that you have to go to culinary school. Mm-hmm. However, if you want to be a chef, it starts now. To me, get all of the resources and technology that we have these days, get on YouTube, you know, learn how to chop an onion, learn knife skills, be proactive in your learning experience. And then when you get old enough to work in a restaurant, do that. Go to a restaurant, because no matter what, if you go to culinary school, when you enter restaurant world, you're still going to start off at the bottom of the totem pole and you got to work your way up. And so with that being said, you know, why not start there, work your way up in the culinary world or in the culinary industry. And then if you want to be a TV chef, that's a whole completely different conversation. But Mr. Hurt can definitely help you get there as well. So that's the conversation that I have with my kids that want to go into the culinary world.
And is, you know, in terms of if they make the decision, you know, in terms of starting young, do you think there's they need to learn the kind of classic training, French cuisine, that sort of, is that still needed in today's modern, you know, culinary world?
You know, I think that there is a level of that needed. I think that, you know, one thing that culinary school teaches you is that, you know, they do teach you foundations of, you know, different types of cuisine, French cuisine, Japanese cuisine, et cetera, et cetera. But they also teach you, you know, the science behind cooking and, you know, measurements and, like, you know, that they teach you a lot of that foundational stuff. But as I said, Jeffrey, I mean, in this age of technology, you can literally go on YouTube and take a culinary course, you know, from start to finish, and, you know, not pay a dime. And so, you know, as we got to start being, you know, just have an ingenuity in the way that we do things. And I know that, like, the kids that I serve on a daily basis, they come from low income areas. And, you know, a lot of times their families and their parents don't have enough money for them to go to school. And they are really conscious about acquiring a lot of debt. And so, you know, if being a chef is what you want to do, again, you can learn those qualities and you can learn those skills and those techniques and go into the restaurant world and learn from a chef or learn from, you know, other people around you. And that's what, if you have the passion, you know, we were talking about passion. If you have the passion, you can learn from the things around you. As I said before, on MasterChef, I learned from my judges. I learned from my peers, you know, I learned from everything around me. I learned from watching YouTube videos and going back and just studying, you know, books. And I mean, I learned that way. And so if you have the passion for it, you can do anything and achieve anything you would like.
And I'm assuming, so that kind of leads me to thinking, you're now a father. So you have little Harley, who's almost one. How did that change your perspective on life?
Oh my goodness. You know, having a daughter is the best thing that has ever happened to me, Jeffrey. I mean, because, you know, after I won MasterChef, I mean, I was just, the world was mine. I traveled around, I did so many different things. And so after having Harley, you know, things slowed down quite a bit, which was a great thing for me because it allowed me to be able to love that little girl with all of me, but then also be able to like really see all of those developmental milestones, right? Because that I would have missed had I been traveling. So, you know, the babbling and, you know, the laughing for the first time, and, you know, all of those things, the screaming for the first time, all of those things have just melted. I mean, I'm just like a popsicle just melting because I mean, they've really made me just love and admire life and just like really, really like cherish the moment and be, you know, and to really, really be in the moment when things happen.
Yeah. I mean, as a father, I think it's very hard to describe to people who aren't parents what that impact is.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because I think what makes it so hard is because sometimes we can't find the words to just express, you know, the joy and the way that the love that we have for our children.
Even when you want to, now your daughter is still very young. And I have teenage daughters.
Oh.
So we'll talk in about, you know, 15 years and see how you're feeling about that love. No, I'm just kidding. So you were 25 when you won.
Yeah, I was 25 when I went to the competition and won. By the time it aired, I was 26.
Right. So pretty young, and you reached this huge success milestone, you know, MasterChef champion. How do you define success?
Yeah, so for me, success is one of those things that is within self, right? Because, you know, I feel like people have a personal a vision for themselves, they have a personal vision for themselves on, you know, their goals and their dreams and the things that they would like to accomplish in life. And so I think success is one of those criteria that can only be measured by, again, oneself. You know, for me, I felt successful when I graduated college, you know, because that was something big for me. Not many people around, you know, where I come from go to college, let alone graduate. And so that was a success point for me. I, you know, became successful when I got a job teaching and first started working, because I know a lot of people where I come from, you know, have regular jobs, you know. But, you know, if I look at maybe a brother or sister who may not have a college degree and, you know, has grown up where I come from, success for them may look like, you know, just working a 9-to-5, you know? So I guess it just really depends on the part of what that person's idea for success is and the goals and dreams that they have set aside for themselves.
All right, so now I'm gonna apply that to you, Jerome.
Okay.
What is success for Jerome?
So success for me, again, is just like hitting my goals, hitting those milestones. And so, you know, I've graduated college multiple times. I have a master's degree. I've, you know, went out to LA and won this national competition that was like a super success that I guess while I was in LA filming this show, you know, I knew that the possibility of me winning was there. But for me, Jeffrey, it was going out there to learn from the best, going out there to learn learn culinary techniques from Gordon Ramsay, right? Winning was an added bonus for me. So, I mean, that was like uberly successful for me, because my intentions, my expectation wasn't to win, but I mean, I did. And so I guess now, you know, I feel like I've deemed myself successful. However, I do have other, you know, other moments of other periods, or tiers of success that I want. I would love my own cooking show, you know, where I'm, you know, going and I'm like a household name on TV. Like, that is another area of success for me. And so, you know, I guess right now, I mean, I'm successful, but I won't be as successful until I hit that point, you know? So that's a goal.
Yeah. It reminded me when you were talking about going on the show and kind of the success was being on the show and learning. And so there's an expression, a phrase that I always think, which is the journey is the destination.
Absolutely.
And that you have to, if you're not enjoying the journey and you're only looking about what's ahead, you know, you're going to be pretty unhappy. And I think,
Absolutely.
Again,
Absolutely.
whenever you reach that peak, you're going to want to say, well, what's next?
Yeah.
And so it's about, and I think that learning part is what helps us. Okay. I've learned from Gordon Ramsay. Who else can I learn from?
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
So what inspires you? And you can answer this in terms of your, what inspires your cooking, which we know grandma's going to come in there. What inspires you for life in general?
Yeah. So I think what really, really inspires me is, in this age of technology, I'm noticing and I'm able to go and, you know, you can see what everybody is doing these days, what kids are doing, what, the things that are like trendy. I don't know. And I guess what inspires me is when I see young our youth, teenagers who are, you know, very starting these companies and starting these brands and, you know, like really putting really putting on their thinking caps and just like doing these big, you know, and the reason that inspires me, Jeffrey, is because after I won MasterChef and I was challenged to sit down with my legal team with Fox and develop a brand, that was so tough for me. Because I mean, you know, when you develop a brand, it's one of those things where, you know, when people start to think about Chef Jerron, what do you want them to associate Chef Jerron with? Right. And I just, it was because that newfound success was so new. I did not know. It took time to like really figure out. And so for these middle school kids, you know, and are these teenagers who are out here, you know, just building these businesses up. And, you know, I mean, literally I was in, I live in Nashville, Tennessee now, and I was in Murfreesboro, Tennessee a couple of days ago. And there's these two African-American girls, no older than, you know, 16 or 17. And they have their own food truck where I can't even remember what it's called, but they are rolling up the little ice cream circles and putting them in, you know, on a food truck, ice cream food truck. And it's like, wow, that inspires me. Because that, you know, someone who has gotten to them early and has really, really taught them how to develop a brand and how to, you know, open up a restaurant and how to own your own business, be an entrepreneur. And that's tough.
Yeah. I think, again, it's taking that step to do it. Because there's lots and lots of people talking about I should, could, would, maybe one day. And then there's people doing it. Yeah. And I think that's the part you're like, yeah, not only did they have an idea, but they actually went for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty impressive
for me to get there.
Now, this question is often for people who are a little bit older than you. So, because I ask if you could go back to when you were 21, but that's still, you know, a few years back, and give a piece of advice to your younger self.
Yeah.
What would that advice be?
Yeah. No, listen, that advice for me would be to, not be so caught up in what people think about you or, you know, how other people perceive you. Do what makes you happy. And, you know, the reason I say that is because a lot of times we're so focused on, you know, I don't want to, like a lot of times I did not cook or I did not, you know, embrace cooking because of, you know, what society sometimes thinks about me and who cook, who should be watching sports or, you know, this, that, and the other. And so, and it was later in life, you know, 24, 25, where I realized, no, like this is a gift that God gave me and I should be using it 100%, you know, and I'm going to go all in and I'm going to do what I have to do. And look, I mean, look what success has come from that. And so definitely to be you, unapologetically 100% of the time.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's a challenge because I think on the one hand, there are lots of voices.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider social media and there's haters out there. But the other thing I think it's even harder is for some people is finding that passion.
Yeah.
What it is, you know, I have daughters who are like super talented, wonderful creatures. You know, have lots of different interests and like, I don't know what I would like. So we need to, you know, we keep exposing them to things, you know, and keep trying to find that thing but it takes people different amounts of time to figure out what it is that really, but I think it's partly of being self-aware to be thinking in that mindset of follow your heart, follow your passion, and then good things will happen.
I always, you know, when I think about passion, I always think of, you know, what do your passion and the things that you're good, your talent, the thing that you're good at, is that one thing that people call on you for all the time? You know, for me, it's cooking. For, you know, for my wife, it's hair, you know, people call my wife and say, hey, you know, I see, you know, what hair care product should I buy from this store? You know, so it's just that one thing that people just call on you for, you know, and if you find that and you really, really wholeheartedly go into that and feed into like what, you know, their perception and the thing that people deem, you know, you, I feel like that passion and your talent will be discovered and will come out. So that's my take on it.
Amen. Now this may come across as an odd question. I haven't asked this of anyone previously officially, but you know, and it's so if you were on death row,
okay,
and you're getting executed the next day and they ask you what you want for your last meal.
Okay.
What do you request?
Jeffrey, that's harsh, man. No, listen, give me surf and turf. Give me a tomahawk steak with a crispy skinned salmon with asparagus. I want Brussels sprouts too. I'm allowed to have two veg on today. So give me Brussels sprouts with extra bacon. Give me balsamic drizzle. Give me, you know, I want mashed potatoes. I want mac and cheese. I want corn on the cob. I even want the corn with the elotes with the little cojita cheese in the drizzle. Give me it all. I want everything that I love.
So you got it. But the best answer to that question, I have to say, came from my father, who is a judge, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And this is his kind of joke, which, he says, if they ask me what I want for my last meal, I'm going to say, I would like an all-you-can-eat buffet, please.
For sure. No, for sure. That's exactly.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah, for sure. No, that makes so much sense.
He's a smart guy. So, Jerome, what do you think is next? The next trend in the culinary world?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, we have been in quarantine for over a year now, and so as everyone starts to get these vaccines, and COVID starts to die down, I'm pretty sure people are wanting to start getting back on Beachbody, right? People are going to start wanting to lose weight and, you know, get ready for being outside again. Cause I picked up quite some weight just being in the house eating and, you know, and living. So I don't know exactly what that culinary trend will be, but what I do know is that it will be a healthy trend. It will be something revolved around, healthy. I know keto has been really big here recently. And continues to be big. I know these acai bowls have been really big. The frozen smoothies.
My kids love them. Yeah,
they've been a really big trend. So I definitely know, Jeffrey, it'll be something healthy. I just don't know what.
and what's next for you?
Yeah. So what's next for me? We're in the process of working on a cookbook right now.
Mm-hmm. We're all very excited. What's the timeline for that?
Well, hopefully this time next year it'll be released. And the reason is I'm in the very beginning phases of working on it, and so it took us some time to write, like really, really hone in a concept. Mm-hmm. But when I think about my brand is food education. And so, you know, when you think about education, you think about kids. So this is going to be a children's cookbook. This is going to teach kids, you know, how to cook and elevate, be able to elevate dishes, you know, the restaurant quality at a young age. And so I'm very excited about it. I told you that I really, really want to, a goal for myself, you know, 5-year goal. Would be to have my own cooking show. And so whether that's a host or, you know, a residency judge or, you know, whether that's just my own cooking show, I want that for myself. And so those are my top things, that, you know, my top goals right now.
Well, I have a good feeling when you put your mind to something, it happens. So
yeah,
you put it out in the world. I look forward to watching you on your show.
Oh, well, thank you. In fact, you know, when I get my show, I'll invite you on and we can have this conversation again.
I would love that. Can we do something sweet? I'm a baker. That's what I like to do. That's why I bake with my kids.
I'm not but only baking, but we can find a pastry.
I can bring my recipe to you, maybe. You never know.
Yeah, for sure. You know? For sure. I'm open to that.
I do cook a lot with my kids, even though my wife is the primary. I have a few signature dishes that I try and bring in, and I think that's as much as we can hope for.
Give me one. What's one of your signature dishes?
So it's something my dad is, so it's in the family, and it sounds weird, but it's it's called tuna fish curry.
Okay, and no, so I don't know weird at all.
We make it in a wok. And you put a little garlic and curry powder and then whatever other spices. And then whatever fresh vegetables we have, we usually always have corn and then tuna fish. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that's good about it is that tuna fish is not expensive. So it's not like you could get fancy and get a tuna steak and all the rest of it. But we make it with tuna fish and then with tomato sauce and you cook it up. We make couscous with it. It's one of my kids' favorites.
I love all of those things. So I do know that that is quite flavorful.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting hungry just thinking.
You know, one thing, I'm a pretty hefty guy, and so I love my protein. But one thing we do if I'm at home cooking and we don't have any protein, what I'll do is I'll make a vegetable tikka masala. And so I'll, you know, if it's cauliflower and broccoli or whatever vegetables I have, beans, I'll just kind of cook that up and then I'll make a tikka masala sauce and then put that over basmati rice and that'll be a meal.
Hey, can we have a veggie tikka masala tonight, please? It's one we make here as well. So, all right, Jerron, it's time for what I call my 9 rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So try not to think about them too much, but we'll see how that goes. So if a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
I don't know his name, but that guy who played The Blind Side, the big black guy, just because he's big and black. And
I just saw it last night. He was great. Great movie.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Michael Orr is the character. We'll find out his name. Yeah. And then... What you doing? Are you Googling it?
I'm sorry. I have to grab my charger.
Oh, no problem. While you charge it, I feel bad that we don't know his name. So I'm going to quickly look it up.
Okay. Sure.
We can do that. The Blind Side. Let's see. This is how life works. You can just look stuff up. Because I feel, you know, he was such a good actor. We should give him credit.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Quentin Aaron.
What's his name?
Quentin Aaron.
Quentin Aaron.
Now starring as Chef Jerron.
Yeah, I love it.
All right. Should all stories have happy endings?
No, because real life all the time doesn't have a happy ending.
Do you have a favorite emoji?
Yes, the purple one with the little devil horns.
I thought you were a nice guy. I guess not. No, I'm just kidding.
No, yeah, it's just, it's cool.
It's cute. I agree. Can you name one of your favorite songs?
My favorite song? Ascension by Maxwell is one of my, it used to start my day. Every single day I would just, Alexa, can you play Ascension? You know, it starts my day.
I love it. Do you have a favorite social media platform?
Instagram for sure.
Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
Not a book, but most recently I've read a short story. And the short story is called Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been? And so it's I'm kind of a geek because I'm an English teacher. Come on. But it is the first story. I won't say the first story. It's a story that is, it's about a girl named Connie who It's just like really affected by her society. You know, she's in high school, kids are saying this about her, that about her. And she's like really ready to like venture off and learn about the world. Well, she goes and she to the movies and she meets this guy named Arnold Friend. And Arnold Friend is turns out to be a really bad man. So, you know, it's kind of, he kind of symbolizes the devil. And, you know, she's having a hard time.
She referenced the devil.
Huh?
I said, that's twice you've referenced the devil.
Yeah. So like, I mean, he represents the devil. And so like, she meets him at a movie theater. She goes out, and she's having a hard time with her parents. You know, she's arguing with her parents. And the day that they decide to go out to a barbecue at her aunt's house, she doesn't go. And she ends up inviting this guy, Arnold, his name is Arnold Friend, but I mean, and all coincidence, well, he's not really her friend. And so he calls her on the phone. She did not give him her number, calls her on the phone and invites her out, and she ends up getting kidnapped and he kills her. Oh. And so like, yeah, I guess I really like it because it was one of those things that I had my middle school kids read and they were like really interested in it. And as a teacher, you know, anytime you can really get a kid to buy into a text like they, you know, it's a win. And so it's a higher level text. It's actually a high school level text. And they were able to really get that and comprehend it. And then pull out
story can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And pull out some literary devices and stuff. So yeah.
Can you name one of your favorite movies?
Yeah. Favorite movie. Definitely Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump is like, I can watch over and over and over again and not get tired of it.
I'll tell you a funny story about Forrest Gump. So I moved to New York after I graduated college.
Uh-huh.
And my first weekend in New York, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go and check out Greenwich Village. And so I go down to Greenwich Village, and this is back when they had video stores. And I walk in, and I love movies. So I walk into the video store, and I'm kind of looking at movies, and they have screens playing movies. And Forrest Gump just started, and I had seen it. And I watched the entire movie in the video store.
Just standing around looking.
Eventually, because I was there, like, you could just watch it. It's okay.
I miss video stores. I mean, video stores are such a nostalgic experience now, you know?
Yeah, I like being able to kind of browse and pick up. And yeah, there was something to it. What's one thing you can't live without?
Oh, one thing I can't, food, of course. I mean, food. I mean, I could.
Is there one food that if you had to give up would hurt the most?
Probably salmon. Salmon is my favorite protein. Like, I love salmon. Anything you can, you know, fried, grilled, like any way. I would be very hurt if I had to give up salmon.
We eat a lot of salmon. There's actually a recipe. I don't know where am I called. We call it salmon ramen, and it's basically salmon and like an udon broth and with udon noodles. Oh, so good.
Oh, I bet that's good. It sounds good.
I don't know why I'm surprised I'm getting hungry talking to you, someone whose life is all about cooking, but you get me. All right. So if you could be credited with inventing something, what would it be and why?
Probably like a Apple anything, right? An Apple computer, Apple iPhone. I mean, iPhones. I mean, Mac, like it's such a big brand. And I feel like in the rate that we're going, everyone will be Apple users, you know, because Apple is just like, and don't get me wrong. I know like Android and Google and, you know, things are, you know, they're big as well, but Apple seems to be so dominant these days. And so definitely Apple. I mean, I would be a very, very rich man.
Well, maybe you should think about how you can introduce some sort of cooking appliance that's Apple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that would be tough. But one thing I noticed recently that they don't have on the shelves, that at least I haven't seen. You know, fried chicken is one of those staples that most people love. You know, not very, very, very little people don't like fried chicken. And I noticed that like sometimes the best fried chickens that are cooked very quickly come from those pressure cookers, the broasters is what they call them, where they're like deep fried, but then deep fried pressure cooker. It would be cool to have one of those as an appliance that you can have in your house, you know, where you cook fried chicken, you bread fried chicken, and you cook it, you know, within 7 or 8 minutes. And I mean, it just comes up golden. I mean, a chicken, a breast. That's one thing that I don't cook at home much is like a whole fried chicken breast because it takes so long to cook. Right. And by the time you cook that, the outside is still, you know, so a broaster would be practical and be something that, you know, everybody right. could.
I think they should make it Chef Sharon's broaster. Like it's just ready to go.
Well, we'll see. I may look into that.
Well, you should. Jerron, this has been an absolute pleasure. And I appreciate just your warmth and personality, which is as much evident here as it was on the show. And I want to thank you for being here. Is there anything you want, you know, that you want people to focus on in terms of promoting or you want to share? Here's your opportunity to do so.
Yeah, sure. Let me start first by saying, Jeffrey, thank you for having me. I appreciate, you know, just having a platform to be myself. And so thank you again. And for me, social media, of course, Instagram, mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, at Chef Jerron, G-E-R-R-O-N is my name. And then my website, check out my website, familyonaplate.com, where you can see a host of recipes of mine for free. And then just check out some content. I have some blog posts and a couple of things. I really need to update that thing. It's been a while, but
you've been busy with this little thing called Harley, so we'll give you a pass for now.
Yes.
But once she's a year old, then you got to get back to work. Oh, you know, that's how it goes.
I know, but that's my world. Harley's my world, so I'll get back to working real soon, y'all.
It's the most important job. Let me tell you that.
It is. Harley absolutely is the most important.
Well, I was calling you Chef Jerron. I mean, is that what people call you now? Is that they don't, you know, you have a title?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's my social media handle. So a lot of times, you know, people call me Jerron, but a lot of times people, you know, who I may have never met before, if I'm someone like Chef Jerron, Chef Jerron. Like literally it happened to me yesterday. I went into the liquor store and I wanted an old fashioned. And so I went and got everything to make an old fashioned. And the moment I got to the counter, a guy was like, Oh my God. Like, are you Jerron? I said, yeah. Hey, how's it going? He was like, dude, me and my wife just watched you last night. I said, well, thank you for watching, man. I said, now, can I have my bag? Can I go? No, but he ended up giving
that's the challenge of being a celebrity now. Well, this again, so happy that I got you here and you've been a pleasure, a real delight. And most of all, I just want to thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Thank you.